Welcome to the show. I'm Christian Parsons. Thanks for tuning in. The holiday schedule got a little bit crazy, and with the NFL playoffs, our planning for the podcast went off the rails. But we're back and excited to bring you some awesome content and guests for 2021. On Make the Cut, we deconstruct the career paths, work lessons, and practical advice of the people who have built successful careers on the business side of pro sports. From the NHL to the NBA, from football to soccer. These are the stories of people who make it happen off the field, off the ice, and off the court. Our goal is for you to leave with a better knowledge of what it's like to work in the world of pro sports, different jobs that you didn't know existed, and actionable steps to help you get your next job in sports. Today, we're talking with Anthony Ruggiero. He's an art director at Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment. That's the company that owns the Toronto Maple Leafs and Raptors. He has a fascinating story. 10 years ago, he started working in the team store in the Air Canada Centre. That's the place where they sell jerseys. He worked his ass off to move up and has now designed the jerseys and uniforms that the Maple Leafs and Raptors actually sell in that same store. We dive into that and nerd out on some uniform design storytelling and concepts. And of course, we go into the practicals that he used to move up from somebody who was selling you a jersey to somebody who was designing uniforms for NBA and NHL teams. Here's our conversation with Anthony Ruggiero. First and foremost, let's dig into what you do. Break it down for someone who doesn't really know design, art direction, or the creative side of pro sports.
That's a big one to unpack because, there's just a lot, honestly. It's like, you know, so as an art director, you kind of are the person to kind of start and begin the conceptual discussions and strategic planning for what the brand and storytelling will be for that coming season, let's just say. And an example of that, like working with the Leafs and Raptors, and primarily right now for the Leafs, that stuff I'm doing, you're trying to help narrate what that story is going to be, whether it's like having a hand in discussing copywriting, visuals, and overall impact of what story you want to tell for that season. And then you also work hand in hand with other designers on your team, whether, junior, intermediate, senior designers, even freelance designers that come on board that you work with to try and help you establish the look and feel for that season. And so, yeah, there's a lot that goes on. It's not just like still static graphics that you have to think of. You know, you're also working with members on the motion team. So there's a whole motion department that actually, they are an extension of marketing. And they basically take and adopt your creative image and look and feel that you developed. And, and they're the ones that also supply the added flair and motion and development of that, whether it's in arena, on social, or even at a home, things like that. So yeah, it's a lot, right? It's I find as an art director, you're not just like sitting there art directing people and telling them what to do. My hands get dirty a lot. I'm in there actually like developing and creating just as much as a graphic designer would. And so, the difference too is that like I'm kind of, working with my own team. And obviously they vary based on teams, like everyone's different, but I have a group of like four people that I work with on my immediate team. And then I work with other art directors and other departments on how, our stuff, bridges the gap between us and other departments. Right. And then obviously I work with my creative director. The creative director oversees everything. And I report directly into him, and we have a lot of conversations about establishing, the tone, the storytelling, the look, what we want to do. And, then I basically, follow that up with my own team and strategically run them through, okay, this is the plan of action. And when we go through waves and waves and waves of different creative to get us there. So.
Got it. So it sounds like if we start at the beginning or preseason or we start off season, you figure out, hey, here's the look and feel that we want to have for this team, whether it's the Toronto Maple Leafs, whether it's the Toronto Raptors, whether it's Toronto FC, Argos, whatever, Toronto Blue Jays, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And say like, hey, here's overall what we're trying to do from a marketing perspective. Here's the look and feel that delivers on that.
Yep.
And then throughout the season, you're working with your team to make sure that's executed at every angle.
Exactly. And how it's even established, it's not just starting from us. It's those are conversations that happen up the ranks, even to front office. So like even the presidents of the teams, front office has a mindset of what, the tone they kind of want to set for that season. And it kind of works its way down into the marketing departments, and then we kind of take that information and we, you know, we put into forms of a deck, and that's how we start to think and strategize based on what those needs are and how do we like maximize that storytelling. Then we obviously like we put our own spin on it and come up with creative ways that obviously they don't necessarily think about. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it doesn't just touch just a creative department. It goes all the way up the ladder. So.
Got it. You're saying that it almost comes from all the way up the ladder, right? So if Cy Ujiri or Bobby Webster are like, hey, this is what our identity is going to be on the court this year. This is really what we want to emphasize from the brand this year. Or Brendan Shanahan and Kyle Dubas do the same thing for the Leafs. Yeah. That comes down and you're like, okay, I understand the goals that we're trying to communicate in marketing. Now here's a look, a feel, a style of photography, typeface, a vibe that kind of like works together for that.
Yeah, absolutely. You're right. And even to just add on that quickly is like under front office, like there's brand teams as well who are kind of the middleman between front office and us as our creative departments. And so a lot of times we're having a lot of the conversations between us and brand. Mm-hmm. And so what happens is we kind of develop a plan that way before even front office sees anything. And we kind of propose those ideas to brand, kind of having that knowledge from brand in front office, like, hey, this is like who we are. But then we're the ones responsible being like, this is what we need to do, or this is what we should start doing. This is how it can come together. And then things get approved or not approved. And yeah, you start over from scratch before the season starts. Who knows?
you never know how things are going to go. You don't know how they're going to react, especially with creative. I mean, creative generally is so subjective that it's really hard to kind of lock it down. And that's why it's so important to have that connection with the brand side, to have everything tie back to whatever the strategy is and what you're trying to communicate from the front office. And then it's really easy. Sorry, it's easier to sell it in because you say, this is the problem, this is the solution, and this is the look that ladders up to that solution.
100%. And it's about how you do it too, right? What are the unique and different? That's the key word. Mm-hmm. How can you be different every season and telling those stories and having the brand still be very impactful and still have that following and gaining and attracting more viewership and fans, right?
Well, I mean, look, you just bring up a really good challenge, right? Where that's a little bit of a tension. How do you make it different every season so it feels fresh and it feels new, but not so different that you're like, well, that's not this brand. That's completely different.
100%. And I think, and that's a good thing about like Leafs, for example, is like, you can argue even Raptors, like once they found the We the North messaging and identity, it's like, that is what started the uprising of that. And like, that's what really felt like, wow, this is an ownable, unique brand. Then it's obviously done wonders for them as well, and it still is. It's growing, and it's like, how do you build off that? And so, you know, very much for the Leafs is, you know, we're starting to develop ways within Leafs Forever. Mm-hmm. And how do you own that, and how do you actually set that up for success years to come, and make it a part of your brand image and be a more ownable thing?
That's super cool. That's awesome. I think it's really important that people understand the business impact of what you do. Because I think people can often look at something like art direction, look, feel, design, all of that kind of stuff. Yeah. And be like, yeah, it looks cool, but what does it actually do? To me, I want people to understand how much the visual vibe of a brand really creates a connection with the fan base.
Well, yeah, it's... You know, it's not like you look at some graphic, oh, that looks good or it doesn't. It's all about the story in which you tell and how you tell it. And you do it through these beautiful visuals. And how do you strategically plant those seeds and map out your season and telling that story? And so every creative decision that we make, you know, you get this a lot of time. People are like, oh, why don't they just do that? And what people have to realize when they're not from this world is that someone in our shoes, we have to think about every single outcome. And we probably have created a thousand different concepts for one asset, just the way it's thinking. And like, we've already come up with everything you've probably already come up with and then some. And we have to figure out, okay, what is the best way now to carve out the path of success to tell that story? And so the impact lies too of like, you know, you have, you know, you're marketing players. These players make millions of dollars. They have partnerships, they have collaborations. And that's the beauty part of about it too. When you're collaborating with third-party brands, whether that be Adidas, Nike, Under Armour, whatever it may be, you know, your brand now is attached to those brands and your brand is attached to that player. And, you know, people have favorite players. They'll follow and love a favorite player because of the equipment or the team that they play for. You know what I mean? And so there might be people who are like, ah, they don't pay attention to like those little things, but it's those little things that we have to pay attention to while we're developing our creative, because you're building equity in your brand and creating the awareness of trying to gain eyeballs and attract new fans. So I think the impact there is huge because, you know, if you're putting out content, and that's the other thing too, we're creating way more content for social viewership. You have to constantly pivot when things are trending. How do you react to certain changes happening within the market in a given season? There's multiple different narratives that happen throughout the year, different storytelling that happens. You kind of have to be quick on your feet in terms of how can your creative and strategic development, how does it positively impact what's going on the day to day?
Absolutely. Yeah, I want to pull back and just call out like a couple of things that you said. I think number one, the design is about the story, right? Anyone can drop into InDesign, Photoshop, and come up with a design.
Yeah.
But does it ladder up to the larger brand story? That's the part that I think a lot of people that are shelling their quick designs on Twitter are probably missing out just a little bit.
Well, yeah. And you hit it right there. You make a good point. Like, that's the thing, right? Anybody now can just pick up, whether it's their phone, create stuff on their phone, create stuff on their computer. But the beauty of what we're doing is we're help creating awareness and telling stories and doing it strategically too. I mean, it's not even so much of a static graphic you see. It's like even the video content that you see, anything that is put out by our brand, it all stems from a seed that was an idea that blossomed into what it is now. And there's a purpose for everything. You have to stay consistent, right? You have to stay true and like build on your identity because you get very lost and you could tell which brands have super tight branding and are becoming really recognizable and hold a standard to what their brand image is and some others that just seem kind of random and all over the place, not as organized. And it all just comes down to how you strategically plan your storytelling and map out your visuals to help, you know, narrate that. So,
yeah, that makes a lot of sense. That makes a lot of sense. Speaking of storytelling, I'm really excited to get into the next part. One of the things that I know that you've done in the past couple of years is redesign uniforms, right? And like to the outside person, it's really easy to say like, oh, that's a cool design and that's not a cool design.
Yeah.
But I would love to understand one of those uniform designs and then the story and intent behind it so that we can kind of get a little deeper.
Just trying to think of how I could start this. So like, you know, one of the more recent ones is the Toronto Raptors City Edition uniform from last season. Just before I even get into that, these things take a village. It's not just like one person in front of a computer and be like, this is what I did. Do we like this? Okay, let's put it out. It's like, no, it's like, again, it comes from brand. It comes from the president of front office, all that kind of stuff. And you know, there's things that are briefed in, objectives that are set. And you kind of start ideating, right? You start like kick it out the can and be like, okay, this is maybe what we could do. And, you know, for the unique thing about a City Edition is like every year, and these jerseys for all teams, they're one-offs for that year because every year there's a different one. So one thing you got to keep in mind before you even start off with anything is when you're tasked with something like creating a jersey, it's like there's always a purpose for it, right? It's going to be this one-off thing, or it's only going to be, you know, used for like one or two seasons, whatever it may be. So there's always a purpose for it. Is it an anniversary jersey? I don't know. Is it just a specialty uniform? I don't know. With the City Edition, it's First and foremost, so you know already off the bat, like for us specifically, I'm just going to speak on ours, is, you know, we've adopted the black and gold, the tie into Drake and OVO, that whole narrative. Every year you're thinking, if this is going to be replenished every year, how do you build off it? How do you make it different, unique for people to buy it? Because it's all about the consumer at this point, right? You know, they bought last year's city. Why are they going to buy this year's city? So it's all those things you have to think about. And so, you know, the thinking behind this one too, it starts with, like, it's been a while since we had the word Toronto on the front of a uniform, as opposed to just being Raptors. Even years prior, you had North, let's just say, okay, and the Chevron. But so you kind of take a step back and you think about, okay, what are the first thing I do personally is I pour through the universe of what the Raptors is, from like the history of like what we started from, what happened all the way through up until present time. And then you start to like, then it starts to get crazy. Then you're just like, whole, before you know it, you've got like, oh, like a thousand uniform concepts. And then you start to like, you kind of just start to like a process of elimination based on the storytelling. And so, you know, you start talking about, what do we want this jersey to say? What, how we want it to look? Because some teams have, maybe their objective is to have like this crazy, like abstract uniform, like very bold, edgy. And then some are more conservative. Some are more, you know, dialed down, sleek, sophisticated. So once you kind of establish, you know, the path that you want to go, you could quickly start to eliminate maybe some of those concepts in which might not fit that. And so, you know, with this one too, I thought it was a perfect opportunity. If we're going to have Toronto, it's like, you know, how do we bring back some old with new? And for that, it was like, you know, why not take the original Raptors word mark and that cool, like scripty font and have it in Toronto. And so, and a lot of this too, people might think, oh yeah, you know, they had this before. They probably just retyped Toronto. It seems like a pretty lazy thing. It's like, no. These things aren't like an actual font, established fonts. These are like, all, especially the old stuff. It's like a hand done stuff. And so you kind of go back, you put like pen to paper and you have to basically re-illustrate that typeface in the word Toronto and typeset that in a way that looks authentic to its roots of Raptors. But how do you modernize that? You do that obviously with color. We had the benefit of, like I said, the black and gold, sorry. And so then you take it a step further and it's like, okay, well, you know, you have the word mark, great. But then what does the rest of the uniform look like? And then you try to figure out how it looks like from head to toe. And if you're creating this nice sleek jersey, you know, black is always is a great way to go. And then we took the elements of the pinstripes from the original uniform. And we basically just isolated one pinstripe and we redid the pinstripe, made it thicker, bolder, just for clear visibility. And we basically put it down the sides of the uniform to make it nice and streamlined. And so that kind of like from uniform to shorts, that completes the whole look. And then on the back with the name bar, instead of having just a name, you take another cue and you have the triangles, the arch triangles that we did based on the original uniform. And so instead of just taking that and adding them, you take it a step further. And you, again, this all comes down to like strategically thinking of like, you know, it was seven triangles and it's like, why not reduce it to six? Because the six is a nod to the six of the city of Toronto. So once you do that, then you kind of help round out your story. I know that was a very long answer, but basically what happens. Like, that's just like, just the way I'm thinking, right?
Yeah, no, it's great. I was taking notes and taking a look at the 2020 City Edition jersey, and it's so interesting because I think a lot of people will look at that and they'll be like, oh, cool, I like it or I don't, right?
Yeah.
But understanding that everything involved in it has a piece of the story to tell, I think is super interesting. Mm-hmm. It sounds like the process of it is pretty, you know, is pretty straightforward in terms of like, ask and understand the purpose of the jersey. Hey, this thing's going to be here for 1 year. We want to make sure with this one that it ties to Drake and OVO and really nods to that connection as well as to the city of Toronto. Then you go wide and just done it. Do a ton of fucking designs and take a ton of looks at where the the uniforms have been, then edit it down and hone it in and make sure it all ladders back up to that story, whether it's the pinstripe on the side, the six chevrons on the triangles on the back, all of that kind of stuff, and make sure it ladders back to the brand and also the fan base, right? Because like, that's who's going to be buying this shit.
Exactly. And you're trying to create something that's like timeless too, because you know, you want to attract those fans who know what the old jersey was and looked like, and how does this one differentiate enough, but still ties into those grassroots to make you be like, wow, like I need that jersey. I need this version of that jersey. And yeah, I feel like we did that. It was very popular. I was pretty happy with how it turned out and everybody involved. I mean, like that, you know, it takes a lot of people to get it to that point. It's a lot of like, you know, like creative development on our end, and which we, you know, we always send off to Nike and their team as well. And it just becomes a big collaborative effort, because they have their way of doing things and their designers as well. So it's, yeah, it takes a lot of people. It's not just one person. If some people think that that's the case, they're wrong. And yeah, I've been super happy and fortunate enough that I've been, you know, to even say I was a person, a part of this. So
that's awesome. So leading into that, what work project makes you most proud over the past couple of years?
Whew, man.
There's a lot. You don't have to pick your favorite child, but just give me one.
Yeah, give me one. I'm going to say, as much as I love like developing campaigns and story, I'm going to use another uniform project just because it was like my first uniform design that I was actually like, wow, like this is like an ownable thing, was the Leafs Centennial Classic uniform. And so why that's big for me was just because like, yeah, okay, being a hockey fan growing up and like wanting to work for the Leafs and like develop stuff for the Leafs was like, as a kid growing up playing hockey and like you're in awe of like wanting to buy hockey jerseys and like seeing that stuff. And you're always like, I've always wanted to create like design uniforms. And then to have a Toronto Maple Leafs uniform be one of the first ones I got to have a hand in was like, you know, it's one of those like, holy pinch me moments. And just being able to create a uniform that was for a specific game, a special game in which it was for, which was the Centennial Classic, the celebration of the 100th year of the NHL, and to have it against a rivalry team in Detroit, that was just a big moment. And that was the first outdoor game the Leafs hosted at home. And just designing it from like receiving the uniform and touching it and feeling it, seeing the players on the ice and actually being at the event and just like, I don't know. It's hard to put into words. Like when you see a product that you were a part of, like in development, like on the shelves, people wearing it, whether people love it or hate it, it's just something that, and again, it's one of those things people don't realize how much goes into these, uniform designs and, the process involved, and yeah, okay, it could have gone a million other different ways, but there's always a reason why it ended up being the way it was. And just being a part of it for me, and everything that came along with it, because it wasn't just a uniform, right? Because after the uniform in this project, you build ad campaigns for it, the marketing plans, and it's like, now you're developing creative around this uniform and the players, right? And to your point earlier of like the impact it has, you know, it's what players are wearing the uniform in your ad campaign. Just, you know, people see it like, oh my God, you know, Austin Matthews wearing this uniform. And it's like so many more people like fall in love with it. It's as sad as that is sometimes where it's like, it's relying on the player wearing it. It's like players obviously sell the uniforms. You know, it's not always just relied upon the design, but just being a part of that for the first time in my career was like a very humbling experience.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And look, I think there's a lot of instances in creatives where you come up with ideas or designs, but when you see it in the real world or you see a kid wearing it, you know, whose dad bought it for them or mom bought it for them for Christmas or something like that, like you're like, this is insane.
Yeah, no, 100%. And I jokingly say to people, like, they're like, oh my God, like, how does it feel like, you know, that like you did that? And I'm like, I joke saying like, I'll just run to the people, ask if they want me to sign it, you know, or just sign it without them knowing it. And like, what the hell are you doing? Who's this guy?
Yeah, but it's interesting at the world's smallest level, I think people are starting to gain an appreciation for the craftspeople behind the designs. It's not just the thing that you see people are wearing, but the craftspeople behind the designs and the storytelling behind the design. That's why I'm enjoying this conversation.
Yeah, I think that's great. It's very hard to put into words, but like, think of it. If just say everyone hated something you created, but you were proud to be a part of it, and there was a moment in particular, like related to that, that you were proud of, like, that's all that matters, right? Like if you set out those goals, like I had set out these goals for so long for myself, and to kind of reach that point, like everything is just like noise, right? Like, and you, like you said it, things are biased. You know, there's always a reason for everything. And just being a part of it is very, it's very humbling. And it's like, you always got to pinch yourself and realize, wow, like this is the shit that I'm like doing. It's like, it's a dream, really. It's, I'm very proud to be able to do this. And it's, you know, it's not even just so much like there is a moment that you can't explain unless you're actually living it. It's like, you know, I created that uniform and I'm like standing beside a, you know, a player, let's just say like Austin Matthews, and he's wearing the uniform that you helped create. Anyone can say anything. You can't take that away from me. You know what I mean? It's, and that goes for anybody in the industry who create crazy shit that is amazing, that have those experiences. So there's just something to be said about that.
Absolutely. And look, like, I think what you're alluding to, and I'll try to say it explicitly, is anytime you change a uniform, fans of a sports team, a percentage of fans of a sports team will hate it and be very loud about it on social media.
Yeah.
Because in general, sports fans are very passionate, and especially in older fan bases, don't like change.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. And the only thing, you know, one of the things that stuck with me that Masai Ujiri said that I was like, oh, that's real fucking smart, he said he doesn't read his own press on decisions until like 4 to 5 months later. Because whenever you change or release a brand new uniform, people can love it or people can hate it, right?
Right.
But the real mark of success is 4 to 5 months later, are people wearing it?
Yes. Yep.
Right?
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, it's true. And, you know, and for me, I'm just like, you look back on it, it's sometimes you create things and it becomes part of history. Like, you know, whether that's a specialty event, whether that's a championship game, and it's like, holy shit, like the stuff that we did was that stuff you can't erase. It's mm-hmm. always going to stand the test of time. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Yeah. No, it's awesome. Like you're making an artifact that is this moment in time, this season. And if something amazing happens in those uniforms, people are going to remember that, which is fantastic. Well,
yeah. And that's just a thing. And you touched on it, like, especially even for football, it's like to think about it. It's one thing to like be in the industry of sports and creating this stuff, but it's another thing too. And I guess it's all based on timing, and it's very lucky for the people who do, to be put in a situation during those changed times and being involved in that change, because who's to say you're going to be involved in the next change? So that right there to me is like crazy. It's like winning the lottery. You know what I mean? It's very rare that you get to be a part of a team first and foremost, but then being a part of a newly developed rebrand, let's just say, is even like it's further up there, you know. It's crazy.
Yeah, absolutely. What went on with the Kraken in Seattle?
Oh,
you know, man. What you know, the thinking that out here in Los Angeles, the thinking that went behind Angel City out here when that came out. Like it's then even on some of the NFL uniform redesigns, it's so interesting to see which brands are comfortable pushing the envelope and which.
Yeah.
And which brands are like, nope, we can't do that. We gotta yep. stick with our established fan base. So
yeah, 100%. And that right there is a part of the other challenge where people don't realize. It's like sometimes you're just in a situation where like you might be more in a conservative team than others, and you could be bold. But here's the challenge: the teams that are more conservative, how do you still make them badass, and how do you still push the envelope? Being in a more conservative model than you would of having like total full creative freedom to like break down so many more walls and barriers, let's just say.
Totally. You take a team like, I'm just going to pick the NBA right now. You take like a team like the Chicago Bulls, right?
Yeah.
And they have such a storied history that you don't want to fuck with that. And because of that, and because they have that legacy and that uniform is so famous, that they don't necessarily have the same creative reins or freedom that a Miami does.
Exactly. You know what I mean? Exactly.
Just because of the personality of the audience that is in Chicago or Boston, that's a little bit more traditional versus a Miami or a Toronto. It's really interesting.
Yeah. And you know what though? And it's not that it's an excuse. I'm not talking about like, oh my God, you know, I'm not in a better situation than others, but you kind of alluded to it a bit is that there are just geographically, like it's some teams have different things to tap into for their storylines. And that create just organically just will just create different narratives and just create a natural like movement. Let's just say, like you look at Miami, their vice jerseys. Let's just say, it's like, you know, there's a whole like element there, right? They're just something that they can tap into that is unique to them that no other team can, essentially. And then, you know, for me, it's all about just having said that, it's like, okay. Now you look at all the other teams, what is the unique thing that is ownable to you that you can make just as good or better?
And it might be tradition and might be a figuring out a way to like lean in and tell that a traditional story a little bit differently.
Yeah, 100%.
So let's say somebody wants to break in to graphic design, uniform design, art direction for a sports team. You've come a long way, so maybe this is a long, long time ago for you. But you know, what's an actionable step that they can take to at least start down the path? Maybe not get the job, but build the skill sets to get the job. What should they be doing?
For me, two things that I've lived by when I thought in my mind, this is what I need to start doing. All right, this is what I need to get into. Networking and persistence. Because those are the two things right there that got me to where I was. You have to also learn to take a step back to take 10 steps forward. And what I mean by that is like from somebody outside trying to get into this, you know, start to pour through the network, go on LinkedIn, do your research, look like research clubs, the back end, like the head office, like just anything you can to network, like pour through your own contacts to see who they know. Even if it's sending an email and you feel like, oh man, this person's not messaging me back, or you slide in someone's DMs, like just keep at it because it will pay off eventually. Honestly, like for me, even if it's gaining experience and it's not in sports is a huge thing. Like, don't let that be discouraged. Like, oh, I'm never going to end up in sports because, you know, don't forget you're only doing yourself one good favor is like you just try to gain as much experience as you can. And whether that's from like, you know, photography, typography, like photo manipulation, just anything, right? I didn't know everything. Let's just say like in the beginning, I didn't know everything. I specialize in one thing. Like I loved branding. I love corporate identity. But then you start to break out of it. And then you start to, when you start figuring out like I love video games growing up. And then I was just like, then, you know, and I was a sports guy and I was like, oh, you know, you see the cover of EA that would come out. I would practice creating my own covers and trying to replicate what came out that year. And I just kept doing it and doing it. All of a sudden, before you knew it, like I kind of not taught myself, I learned from school, but like I developed my skills further in Photoshop. And now I'm like a branding freak and Photoshop wizard. It's just, you have to take it upon yourself on your own time. And there's a lot of people who don't have that drive and they think that, you know, they're just going to hit apply online and then just poof, you know, like you're going to get an email back and then things are going to work out. It's like, no, not at all. So for me, it's all about what you do outside of your day job to get you to your next step.
Absolutely. Networking and building your network, but you also need a skill set and you need to build and like get the reps so that you have a good skill set. Because if somebody likes you, but you can't do the job, you're not getting fucking hired.
100%. And which is why if even say you're working at a place and you know, it's not your favorite place and you're developing like social content, let's just say, but you really like creating logos. So for me, what I would do is I would kick ass at the job you're doing. And then you have in your portfolio, it's like, these are like great social campaigns I worked on. I was a part of these big brands. That's great because big brands are great to have on your book. But then what you always could do is like put things you do for fun, like experiment, like take a bad brand that's out there that has bad or a great brand or a not so great brand and rebrand it, like create a project for you and throw something like that in your book. And right then and there, it's like you have, you're building your book, you're building the awareness, you're building your skill set, and you're showcasing more than one thing that you can do. And I think that's appealing too for employers. It's like, okay, well, you've done this. Well, have you done this? So having just a little bit of variety will go a long way to when an opportunity does come up, you'd be like, hey, this is what I'm doing. But also this is what I like doing on the side on my own time. Cause that's the other part of it too. Right. And you know, a lot of times, like you can create amazing stuff. There's people out there that I know that are in the industry that do shit on their own time and they just do it for fun. And people are more attracted to that stuff than maybe what they're doing in their day-to-day job, and which creates more eyeballs, creates more awareness, creates more conversation, and it goes on. So that's what I would do.
Well, you know what's really interesting about that? I don't know if you saw this. Daniel Arsham is like a artist, basically. Yeah. Like yeah. He started as an artist, and the Cleveland Cavaliers just hired him as a creative director.
Okay.
And it's super interesting because I felt like all the stuff that you're saying, all of the like non-basketball work stuff, he makes sculptures of Pokemon cards, and he takes pictures of like old ass Porsches. But all of those diversity of interests create an interesting template and a new lens to look at. And obviously he's a basketball fan, you know,
yeah.
A new lens to look at basketball, having this diversity of interest and practice and expertise.
Yeah. 100%. And you know, it's a lot of the fun stuff you do on the side that like people are probably thinking of at home, like, mm-hmm. Oh yeah, you know, it'd be cool if this was this. And all of a sudden, like you go and create that thing, you instantly made a connection, and especially on social media, and someone probably slid into your DMs and be like, man, that shit's cool. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's that person who reached out to you works somewhere or knows somebody that works somewhere. And it blossoms from there.
The gap that I will say that I want to highlight right there is there's a difference between someone thinking of an idea and someone doing it.
Yeah, 100%.
Right? Yep. I think a lot of people sit on their couch and they're like, oh, this would be really cool. Oh, I thought about that. Yeah, but you didn't do it.
You didn't do it.
You didn't put pen to paper. You didn't spend 5 hours or whatever it is in your computer trying to make it happen.
Yep.
You just had an idea. And that's the difference.
Yes, that is a huge difference. So, and it's the people who take that extra step to actually like, you know, who hits the mark first, mm-hmm. tells that story first, usually hits gold, right? So that's just a thing, right? And especially now, such a heavily content driven world. Especially on social, like people gonna just like post something in 1 second, mm-hmm. and there you go, it's out there. Conversations are had. So,
yeah, the worst thing that happens is that nobody cares. It's not like somebody's gonna see it and be like, "You're an idiot." yeah. You know, I think the worst thing to happen is really that nobody sees it. So, like, there's no love lost there. So.
No, not at all. Yeah, I totally agree.
Last question for you: mm-hmm. Is there anything that I haven't asked you that you would like to say to our audience, to college kids coming out looking to start in sports?
Whew. That's a loaded one. I touched on it when I said you could learn to take a step back to take a step forward. Mm-hmm. And so if I can just give you a quick example of what I did, mm-hmm. I was working at an ad agency. It was like my first gig, super excited. And I ended up getting laid off. And it was like, what the hell just happened? Super, super discouraging. I always knew I wanted to work in sports. Okay. I was applying to places, but until I can get hired and find another gig, I actually worked at the team store when it was Air Canada Center. Okay. And I did that because somebody had told me that, hey, when I worked there, so-and-so, the creative director for MLS Eager Leafs at the time, you know, employees come down here from time to time, this and that. And so, you know, a good 4 months in, you know, my manager there said, hey, that that's so-and-so, he's a creative director upstairs. Like, you might want to, you know, feel free to talk to him, right? He was just there on his own and it was pretty quiet. It was like him and maybe one other person in the store. I approached him, introduced myself, told him who I was, what I was doing, laid it all out for him. Sure enough, 4 months later, this guy calls me out of the blue. He left MLSE and he went to Sportsnet. And Sportsnet at the time was like, it was not the greatest, like look wise. And I think he was put there to, like, you know, rebrand it, make it what it, whatever it is today. Right. And, you know, from there, he gave me a freelance gig. And then once I did the freelance gig, boom, I was hired full-time contract at Sportsnet. And then that was my first taste of like sports world. And, you know, because they're owned by Rogers too, you're doing other things as well. But that was like the main reason why I was brought in on the sports side of it. Cause he knew I was a hockey guy and they were rebranding a whole bunch of stuff. So then I was a part of that initial rebrand. Right. So, and I worked with people who were on that team that all used to work, not all, but a good chunk of them worked at MLSE. And then before you know it, my whole networking, I that's when it took off. Like, I started networking, you talk to people and so-and-so knows somebody. And I cold called. This is another thing I'm going to tell people. Everyone's, I make fun of my wife about this all the time. She hates picking up. Oh, don't call me. I don't want to call these people. I'll just text them. I'll email them. No one likes to have the face-to-face or even a simple conversation like this anymore. I'm very like old school, even though I'm not that old. I like to just directly call. I just cold called you. Cold call people. Lay it out there and who knows what happens. That's what I did. After I started networking, I built that up. I cold called the creative director at MLSE, the new one. Okay. Met him up for a coffee at Starbucks near the arena. And I just said, I literally poured my soul out to him. And, you know, I felt like everything happened for a reason leading up to that, because me getting laid off allowed me the opportunity to take a step back, to reassess, to kind of achieve what I really wanted to. And then from that, I got to experience and get my foot in the door somewhere else in the sports industry, even though it wasn't like a crazy, crazy thing. I was able to take my learnings and my experience and you know, mix that with your passion and you basically unravel it. And I basically poured that to him and I basically said, everything I needed to say, showed him everything I needed to show him in support of that. And, you know, he was kind of like shocked and like in awe, like, wow, like, who is this guy? Look at all this shit that he's done. He knows people that I know even. And then on top of that, you know, you know for sure he was going to go in and to maybe talk to those people. Who knows? So I laid it out there. And then before you know it, like, I don't know, a few months down the road, he calls me up. Again, similar situation, freelance gig. I did the freelance gig and I guess I crushed it, because then like they offered me again a full-time contract role. And then I've been at MLSE ever since. So I'm obviously now, I've worked my way up, but that's how it started. I know that's a crazy story to tell, but I think there's a lot of learnings in that of like, don't give up essentially. Mm-hmm. And just learn that by taking a step back means that you can then focus on the step ahead and what needs and what you truly want to do. And yeah, just like using your network and your contacts to help you to kind of get there. Cause you truly can't just do it on your own. Right. It is up to you. Yes. But yeah, you need your experiences to kind of carry you through and build your contacts in order to help live that, you know.
A big thank you to Anthony for joining us. I love talking and learning about the design storytelling behind the latest jerseys for the Raptors, you know, his thinking behind the Leafs Centennial jersey. And of course, how fascinating it is that he started slinging Leafs jerseys and then 10 years later, he's actually on the team that's designing them. Pretty cool. Once again, I'm Christian Parsons. We're starting to build a community out here on Make the Cut. If you have any suggestions for show guests or want to reach out, you can reach me at ThisIsParsons on Twitter and Instagram. You can see our show notes and transcripts at mtcpod.com. That's mtcpod.com. I hope you're able to learn something valuable from every single episode of the show. If you found it helpful, I ask that you share it with friends. Now get out there and get hired in sports.